Cause like a winter tonight, I thought I would always have light. The quick flash that you gave to me, so dark I could barely see. Looking
from wherever you are around the world, welcome and thank you for joining us. Today we're going to be exploring the world of hostage negotiation? Well, kind of. You're going to find out more about hostage negotiation and how it translates into strategic business advice. That's right. With us today is former FBI agent Chris Voss. He is the CEO of the Black Swan Group, a strategic business advisory firm that focuses on coaching rising stars in high-stakes business negotiation. He founded the group in 2008. He was with the FBI for 24 years. He's currently an adjunct professor at the USC Marshall School of Business. He was the adjunct professor at the Georgetown University's McDonough School of Business, where he taught business negotiation in the MBA program. So let's welcome Mr. Voss to the circle. Welcome to the circle.
Thanks, Carlos. Happy to be here.
Thank you very much. Great. And actually, I forgot to mention, too, you have a book coming out next year, Killer Deals.
Killer Deals, yeah. We're taking the ideas that we've been using for hostage negotiation to make better business deals, and we're putting them together in a book.
Well, I can't wait to hear about that. But before we get to that, I want to learn a little bit about hostage negotiation in the FBI and what you did. What did you do in the FBI?
All right. Well, I started out working terrorism for the FBI, and then I was originally on a SWAT team, and just found my career gravitating more towards talking to people, more soft power, if you will, and ended up on the hostage negotiation team. Interestingly enough, as exciting as SWAT was, the SWAT guys actually very rarely get to do their thing. You know, they surround and call out, and the hostage negotiators talk people out. So I talked a lot more hostage releases than any of our SWAT guys ever got into shootouts. So
it's a good thing.
The soft power was exercised on a regular basis, and it ended up being the entirety of what I did. My last 7 years of my career, I did nothing else other than hostage negotiation.
Wow. So there's a lot of lives saved, too.
I think so. Yeah, I like to think so.
Yeah, that's a great thing. Now, is it as tense for you? I mean, do you see that when you're going in there and you're being told to negotiate something? I mean, is it pretty tenseful for you?
Well, early on, you learn the process, and then you learn as a negotiator to trust the process. And the process has actually a very successful outcome. Now, I had some time before I became a negotiator. I'd actually spent about a year and a half on a suicide hotline. And for listening skills, whether it's hostage negotiation or business negotiation, there's no better training than a suicide hotline.
Really?
Listening is actually listed in a lot of negotiation textbooks as an advanced skill, and you'd be amazed at what you can learn to listen for between the lines from time spent on a suicide hotline.
That's fascinating. I never even thought about that. Very interesting. Now, when you do your negotiating, you're out there, your first time obviously is going to be kind of different. But towards the end, can you give us an idea of what some of the things that you were looking for in regards to negotiating? Some of the things that kind of told you, one of the questions that popped up in my head, whether this person is able to be talked out of that situation, or is this person just so far gone, doing delusional, whatever it may be that you can't?
Well, the one thing that I learned in negotiations was they always say watch your assumptions, but make sure that your assumptions are hypotheses. Because there have been plenty of situations where you looked at the external nature of everything that was going on, and you have a guy that has absolutely no reason to live, in your view, and we talked that person out. That happened a number of different times. There was a hostage negotiation in Louisiana in, I think it was in the early 90s, and an on-duty deputy sheriff in uniform, in his marked patrol car, pulled a woman over and raped her. And left his business card. Then after he did that, he went to the bank where his wife, his estranged wife, she'd left the house. They weren't divorced yet, where she worked. He went inside. He took over the bank. Again, this is while he's in uniform and on duty, and his marked police car is outside. He takes over the bank. He goes inside. He shoots and kills one person, and he begins to sexually assault some of the other women inside. Now, you and I, as regular human beings, would say that you'll never talk that guy out. He's got nothing to live for. They talked him out.
Talked him out of it.
They talked him out. So in any given communication, you know, the phrase that I learned in hostage negotiation that we apply in business negotiations is there's always leverage. There's always leverage. The only time that you don't have leverage is when the other person is not communicating with you in any way, shape, or form. And that includes communication by actions. So unless they're trying to disappear completely, if they're doing anything you could see, if they're saying anything you could hear, those are a form of communication, and you have leverage if they're communicating.
Absolutely fascinating. I know we're going to get to that business strategies and how you use those techniques that you learn. That's absolutely amazing. There's one thing I noticed on your bio that you said fair. Fair is a dirty word. I have to ask, why is fair a dirty word?
Fair is the F word. It comes up in nearly every negotiation, and that's the way that I teach it in the different business schools that I teach at, that fair is the F word. Because what people will most often do is when they're in the midst of a negotiation, they'll look at the other side and they'll say, look, I just want what's fair. That happens all the time. But what that's done is it's immediately triggered everybody's emotions, because if I say to you, I just want what's fair, I've just accused you of being unfair, and it's going to punch your buttons. Or if I say, I've made you a fair offer. Now, some people do that inadvertently when they genuinely feel that way. And there are negotiation techniques that are done legitimately by people, but they're also done by the sharks that are going to cut our throats. Now, I'm not saying in any way, shape, or form that the negotiators on behalf of the NFL in the last NFL's lockout were sharks, or that they were unfair in any way. I will tell you, as I was watching that unfold, when the representatives for the owners were refusing to open their books to the Players Association, the negotiators on behalf of the owners held a press conference and said, we've made a fair offer.
Things
I don't know what
for.
That means. I'm not implying anything.
Nothing at all.
But, you know, sort of in the immortal, former President Lyndon B. Johnson, there was a few things that he used to always say, and that's one. He'd say, you know, when somebody says something like that to me, the first thing I do is cover my wallet.
So let's go ahead and explore this a little deeper. Then we'll get into the business part. And then towards the end of the interview, we're going to find out what Mr. Voss's opinion is on the France negotiations with those terrorists, as well as the ones maybe in Australia. We'll find out if the world tackles negotiations differently and what they did. But before we get to that, you were mentioning earlier before the show cross-cultural differences. So I'm assuming there's got to be a lot of differences there in negotiating.
Well, you know, there are a lot of differences cross-culturally, which is why the set of hostage negotiation techniques that we used, hostage negotiation teams around the world, literally around the world, and there's an informal association where all the hostage negotiators from around the world get together once a year and trade best practices. So they use these because these are human nature-based skills, and these same skills apply in business negotiations around the world. And what makes it cross-cultural is it's actually subcultural, because before I was an American, before I grew up in Iowa, before I was an Iowan, you know, before I was a Caucasian, Irish, German guy from Iowa, before all of those things, I was a human being. And while we have, I don't know, what is it, 158, 148 countries on the planet, probably 5-6 distinct cultures in that, for each continent, let's say it's a distinct culture. Of all those things, there's one diagnostics and statistical manual of mental disorders for everybody. One. Because we're all human beings. There isn't a separate DSM for Latins. There isn't a separate DSM for Asians. There isn't a separate DSM for Chinese. There isn't a separate DSM for Caucasians, for Africans. It's one book. And so these negotiation principles apply on this level, which is what makes them cross-cultural.
Very fascinating. Very fascinating stuff. So the question remains. Here's the question then. How did you transition this kind of skill that you have, which obviously is really amazing, how did you transfer that into business strategies?
Well, what ended up happening is, and hostage negotiation is not really that old. You know, as a profession, it really got its start in about 1972 as a result of the Munich Olympic hostage taking, where Israeli athletes were killed.
Wow.
That lit the spark that started a number of different places to decide they needed hostage negotiation. The first organization credited with having the first hostage negotiation team is NYPD, New York City Police Department. Now, there were other people at different places in the United States that had the idea at the same time. NYPD is credited with having the first team. So as that evolved, flash forward to the point in time in 2003 when I become the FBI's lead international kidnapping negotiator, that where I made the transition was I worked the kidnapping where the outcome was not what we expected. We thought that we had engineered an agreement for the kidnappers to let the hostages go, and they didn't do it. Ultimately, two out of the three remaining hostages were killed in a botched rescue attempt. These people were killed by friendly fire, not killed by the terrorists. Mm-hmm. But when it was all said and done, we did a review of everything that we did. I did a review of everything that we did. I knew that I'd done everything that we knew how to do, and it wasn't enough. And so it was at that point in time I said, you know, we have to go outside and we have to find other ideas and we have to bring them back into hostage negotiation. We have to get informed. So what I did was I negotiated my way into Harvard Law School's negotiating class. I talked my way in there. When I went through, I was the only non-student to go through. Everyone else was a student either in Harvard Law School or at a nearby university. And I'm the only FBI agent to have ever talked his way into the Harvard Law School negotiation course. And it was while I was at that course that towards the end of the course, I realized that we were doing the same things, just different context. I became very good friends with a number of people on the staff.
Is that Fisher and Uri?
They started it all. And really getting TS author Roger Fisher was really the cornerstone that everything from Harvard was built from. And he was still around when I went through, and I had the pleasure to meet Roger Fisher.
Great.
Fascinating guy. I mean, just like one of those people that you meet that is just a mountain of information. And everything he says, you want to write down because he was so brilliant. And I was lucky enough to meet him a few years before he died. I ended up there and started to collaborate with the people that were there. And then 2 years later, they asked me to come back and teach and be on the teaching staff after I'd retired from the FBI.
Fabulous.
And at that point in time, to me, it was interesting, much more interesting, to take hostage negotiation into business negotiation since I'd been doing it successfully at Harvard Law School. And so that was just the direction that I wanted to take the rest of my life.
So how do you, I mean, okay, I see a situation, obviously it's a lot more intense, I'm assuming, in an FBI hostage situation compared to a maybe a boardroom or a business negotiation, or am I wrong on that?
Well, you know, it's an interesting point, and a client from a company that we were talking to recently said, well, you know, you learn negotiation where it was life and death, and what we're doing is life and career death.
Ah, interesting.
So people can become very wrapped up in the circumstances to start with increased emotions, and then the good thing now, and it makes it easier for me to teach in the business school, is emotional intelligence is a hot topic these days. And people are beginning to be willing to recognize that even in business, we're still human beings and we have emotions. And if that's true, then hostage negotiation skills have direct applicability because it's about negotiating only in the emotional arena. And, you know, there's an argument to be made that every single decision we make is based on what we value. And what we value is based on what we care about, which then makes decision-making an emotional process. Some people would rather say passionate. You know, if I were to say to you, you know, you're very emotional about your job, that would be an insult. If I were to say to you, you're very passionate about your job, it'd be a compliment. What's the difference between passions and emotions?
That's a good point. It's a good point. We're going to be right back after this to get more information from Mr. Vossa. Hang tight.
Welcome to Adelante. This is Adelante Recovery, and my name is Yvette Kuglin, and I'm part of the staff.
Adelante Recovery Center has helped people in dual diagnosis for 5 years. We accept most PPO insurances and provide luxury accommodations and 24-hour support. To speak with an admissions counselor, call 1-888-242-4450.
A lot of time, we don't even know what's wrong with us, and sometimes we need to get away to figure that out. So if you want to go for a little retreat out in Corona Del Mar, which is a confidential location, we're here to help. So we're only a phone call away. Thank you.
Welcome back. We're back with Mr. Voss, former FBI agent, hostage negotiator, and now business strategic advisor. We're going to continue to learn more about his skills that he uses now for business strategies. So now, when you do your business strategies, you work with corporations. You also work with small businesses. I mean, what kind of different individuals do you work with?
Well, now we're working much more with individuals in addition to corporations because, you know, we originally started the training where we were set up to train anywhere from 24 to 40 people at a time for a fairly high price tag. And if you're a small business, although on an individual basis, the per person price tag you could afford, you might not be able to afford the entire thing for 40 people. Mm-hmm. So we're working much more now. We've redesigned our training approach so that we have products, you know, strategies. We've got training that's available to individuals so that you don't have to be attached to a large corporation to be able to learn how to get an edge. And the people that work with us, we recently polled a number of people that worked with us, and they estimated that we made them anywhere from 30 to 70% more effective with what they learned from us.
Wow.
So, you know, massive jumps in productivity. I mean, if you're only 30% more effective, how much does that mean to you on an annualized basis?
It's a lot. And life is really all about sales, isn't it?
You know, sales and negotiation, depending upon, and the two are very interrelated. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure that I could exactly tell you what the difference between a sale and a negotiation is. I think there are certain things outside the lines in both, but 75 to 80% of the functions of both are identical because you're dealing with human beings. You're trying to make people comfortable with you, not only so that what's more important than that they say yes is they agree to how. And one of our sayings in our company is yes is nothing without how. I can say yes all day long. If you don't get the how out of me, your yes is counterfeit.
I have to say I love his analogies. I like to pit him against my four-year-old and see how he does there. She's tricky, boy, I tell you.
I will tell you, along those lines, the gentleman that I'm working on a book with now, and I've got a book entitled Killer Deals, which is going to be on April 2016.
Oh. Thank you for that.
So, and I've got a phenomenal co-writer. His name is Tal Raz. He's a superstar business writer. So he finishes one of the early chapters, and one of his worst critics is his sister. And so his sister reads this chapter, and she goes, oh, my God, I got to use this right away. And she calls her 9-year-old daughter on the phone with the negotiating techniques that she learned in the chapter. And she solved a bunch of problems while she was on the phone with a 9-year-old. So it works.
That's too funny. Now, you mentioned earlier emotional intelligence. So that's a component of it. Is body language also a component of it?
Well, body language is an indicator of what our emotional intelligence is going on. Hmm. And so there's a ratio that a lot of people debate called 7:38:55.
All right.
And what it sort of boils down to is body language is anywhere from 4 to 5 times more important than actually what we say in assessing how somebody means something. So we could be talking, and you might ask me if I agreed to the deal, if I was good with it, and I might say yes. Well, the key to that is the way that I said it. But you might ask me if I agreed to the deal, and I might say yes. And those are two different answers, but the exact same word. And so your job as a negotiator, and especially as a hostage negotiator, then if somebody said something like that to me on the phone, which now I'll do in a business conversation, I would say, well, I heard you say yes, but it seems like there's something that's bothering you. And that way you don't feel cornered and you have the complete option as to whether or not to answer. And people are more likely to answer when they have the option to answer as opposed to being pushed into an answer if I ask you a question. If I were to say, okay, you said yes, what about that bothers you? Well, you might get defensive by that question.
I could see that, yeah.
But if I say, I heard you say yes, but it seems like there's something that bothers you, then you're probably going to sit there for a second. You will appreciate the fact that I noticed something bothered you. And as a result of that appreciation, you're more likely to talk to me.
He's good. Now, you mentioned something there on the phone. So right. Is there a difference between a phone or an in-person negotiation?
Well, almost all of the body language cues that you would look for flow directly to the tone of voice. And while we're on the phone, you know that I can't see you also, subconsciously. So you will actually put more into your tone of voice than you might if we were face-to-face.
Really? On the phone?
Yes. Because you know I can't see you. As silly as that sounds, it affects you on two levels, you know, conscious and subconscious. So, and that will continue to interact with how you pace, how you talk, whether you inflect up or whether you inflect down, all of that.
Fascinating stuff. This guy knows what he's talking about when it comes to negotiations. We promised you we're going to talk a little bit about France. But once again, Chris Voss, CEO of Black Swan Group. Definitely want to go look at it. If you need any help with sales, your company, friends who have companies, this is where you want to contact. But before we get to that, let's find out a little bit about what Mr. Voss thinks. What's happening over there? What happened over there in France? Do you have any insight in regards to the negotiation there? Because it seemed like it happened, it kind of unfolded rather rapidly in the last 24 hours. I'm kind of naive in this world, so I'm not sure if that's normal or not. But what's your take on that?
Well, first of all, the time frame that it occurred in was relatively predictable.
Okay.
Because even though terrorists and kidnappers and hostage takers seem crazy to us, they're still human beings, and they're still bounded by all the rules that human beings are bounded by. And to start with, a lone individual in an isolated location begins to wear out significantly after 12 hours. And they very rarely, if almost never, have the ability to go over 24.
Really?
So whenever I see a siege on television and it's a lone individual that's barricaded, even if he's communicating with other people, if he's not in his home, if he's not someplace where he's already prepared and fortified his defenses, this person is not going to be able to stay in there 24 hours. And they're really going to start to get fatigued and tired at the 9 to 12 hour mark, depending upon some of the other circumstances around the situation. And we actually, for a long time in hostage negotiation, felt that this was the case. And then we started to collect data on it, which backed up in many ways things that we'd known anecdotally, you know, instinctively over the years. And those are one of the things. You can predict within a couple of hours generally how long any given siege is going to last.
Now, when they broke in there to get them out, or they had a little shootout there, was it pretty much over then? They looked like they couldn't negotiate with him anymore, that they had to go in. Is that kind of the tell on that, or is that the secret? Or
well, all right. So then that always gets back to what your definition of negotiation is. And my definition of negotiation is if I can communicate, that's going to influence in order to try to get you to do something. I might be able to be trying to get you to do with it without you realizing that you've agreed. I'm just trying to get you to do something. And so then what avenues of influence do I have? And in those cases, what will happen is a hostage negotiator's job is to continually assess as to whether or not we can talk this person out, or if not, whether or not we're going to have a tactical intervention, SWAT, come in. And then also, what are the indicators that the tactical intervention is coming soon, that we have to do it soon? And we'll begin to communicate with the hostage taker right away, looking at all those indicators to try to figure out a point in time with, because the SWAT team needs as much time as possible to prepare. So if we know we're going to assault, then our job is to simply delay it until the assault is ready. And then at that point in time, our additional job is to provide a distraction so the assault can be successful. Small, subtle little things like when there are multiple hostage takers, we'll want to talk to as many of them as possible, find out which one is the most dangerous, make sure that guy's on the phone when we go in, because then we know where that person is.
Fascinating stuff. That's unbelievable stuff. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. Mr. Chris Voss, people are going to want to know where to get a hold of you, where to go, where do we go?
All right. The website for my company is www.blackswanltd.com, B-L-A-C-K, like the color swan with one N, like the bird, ltd.com. It's derived from the idea that a black swan is something unusual that makes a massive difference, has a big impact. And
like
we have unusual, subtle negotiation skills that make big differences.
I can tell that. Once again, Black Swan, here it is, LTD. You definitely want to get a hold of it. Keep your eye out for killer deals coming out in April 2016. Thank you very much, sir, again, for being on The Circle. Thank you for joining us. Remember, our motto is simple. Wherever there's psychology involved, whether negotiated or not, we're there. See you next time, everyone.